ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hello, Selena Green here for you today for The Country Hour. Great to have you company. Now, in just a moment, a big change announced for the Mesonet system. We'll explain what's involved in that. And later on in the program, we'll look again at hay supply in South Australia because, you know, it's super tight at the moment. Now, are you keen to be able to use virtual fencing? Victoria's now just become the latest state to say they're going to give it the green light by the end of the year, which pretty much will just leave South Australia the last state standing.
So the cost is quite hefty at the start. There's no question about that. I can't really put a cost associated to installing polywires. All it's probably done is freed up my time and all my family's time that build the fences. So we've got a little bit of extra time back.
How do you put a price on time? You're going to hear from one farmer here in South Australia who is trialling this technology and hear what he makes of it. But how keen are you to be able to utilise virtual fencing? My talkback number is 1300 160 222 or text me on 0467 922783. First today, South Australia's Mesonet Weather Network has announced a relaunch and a new membership model for one particular part of the state. So to explain the change, I've got Damien Grace on the line. He's the General Manager of Conditions Over the Landscape, or COTL, as we commonly refer to it as. Damien, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me here, Selena.
So explain for us, what are your plans for the Mesonet? And this is particularly referring to those who access it here on the Limestone Coast?
Yeah. So there's two main changes to the Mesonet, which we publicly announced yesterday. So one is that the Mesonet service covering the Limestone Coast, Langhorne Creek and McLaren Vale regions will move to a paywall system in 2 weeks on the 4th of June. So that will bring it into line with both the Riverland Mallee and the Mid-North Mesonets. And the reason for this is because we're under a lot of pressure to demonstrate that the Mesonet can stand on its own 2 feet financially without any sort of government assistance. And so a user pay model is one of the only options available to us. So that being said, we do have a few sweeteners thrown in for those on the Limestone Coast and in Southeast, and also more broadly across the whole network. And one is... The MacKillop Farm Management Group have agreed to sponsor all their members for a full year's subscription to the Mesonet for the year. So they'll continue to receive free Mesonet access, backed up by another 50% discount, which they negotiated with us, that we'll pay if they choose to renew their membership. And we'll have more details about a referral discount system that will roll out on the 4th of June as well. But secondly, the other thing that we've sort of announced is we're pivoting slightly in our branding and our messaging and just being a little bit more bold. So our new tagline with the Mesonet is one network, one standard, one voice. And basically we're saying that if, as an industry, we fail to demonstrate that we are regulating ourselves properly and that we can't be trusted with access to hazardous agrochemicals, then outsiders will come in and make those decisions for us. Why not jump on board with the Mesonet and just demonstrate that everyone's doing the right thing because, you know, farmers are professionals, so let's show it.
Going back to the issue of charging, and you mentioned there that there is an agreement, though, for those members of the MacKillop Farm Management Group. For those outside of that, how much would they be charged to use the system?
So the charging rates are the same as across the Mesonet. So it's... three different tier subscriptions between $200 a year and $540 a year, depending on the data needs.
And so that, as you say, that's a similar price for how you charge in other districts where there already is a payment system?
Yeah, that's correct. So it's uniform across the entire Mesonet, and it's worth noting that all of these subscriptions, they get you access to every single weather station within the Mesonet. So it's over 110 stations covering 50% of South Australia. And of course, we'd love to see that price come down. And it's great to see MacKillop sponsor their members to do so. If any other groups or organisations want to do that for their clients, we're more than open to that sort of initiative. Yeah.
So, Damien, after obviously Southeast farmers or farmers in those districts have had some free access to this system for now. So did you know how much interest there is out there for paying for MESANet information, or would that will be the proof is in the pudding once you move to this new format?
Yeah, it's difficult to know exactly. I guess from previous experience in the Mid-North and Riverland and Mallee, and I guess any sort of system which moves from free to pay, there will be a drop-off. That would be unfortunate. All we can hope is that the value for money for the MESANet service is very, very clear, such that the payment rate is considered worth it for individual farmers who are making that decision. And just to put that in perspective, I mean, like, the MESANet was mainly built to address spray drift, particularly inversion drift. And the average spend for a farmer on agrochemical product is about $100,000 a year. Whereas the MESANet subscription, even the most expensive one at $540 a year, that's a fraction of 1% of that agrochemical product to ensure that it's sprayed safely. So we would love to see the usage of the MESANet continue in the high rates it has been. But yeah, as you say, the proof will be in the pudding, and we'll be assessing that as time goes on.
Damien Grace, the General Manager of Cottle, is with us today talking about some changes that have just been announced in the past day to the MESANet system. So, Damien, do you know how many subscribers you would really need to ensure that the South East or this MESANet system is sustainable financially and able to keep operating? Do you have a sort of a ballpark number that you're aiming for?
Yes, it's a bit of a two-parter question. Well, because before I answer that one specifically, I'll just mention that we are looking at alternative revenue sources which are outside of the agriculture industry. It's worth noting that really high-grade weather data across agricultural SA is valuable for a whole bunch of different industries, not just agriculture. So we're looking to offset, the need for agricultural industry to pay for all of it. But secondly, if hypothetically the agricultural industry or the growers did have to support the entire thing, we're looking at between maybe 50 to 70% of all broadacre farmers. If they paid for a subscription, that would pay for the MESANet to be self-sustaining. And it's also worth correlating that with the proportion of broadacre farmers, or all farmers really, it's not just broadacre, if they really want to get on top of spray drift, we're talking, you know, we need a majority of farmers complying with safe spray practices, which uses inversion data, which mainly the MESANet provides in these regions. So it's intimately linked with solving spray drift in getting the MESANet to be self-sustaining.
Now, I spoke to you about last month when the state government announced that $350,000 in funding to help keep the system going until the end of June, as you come up with this plan to make this system self-sustainable. Is this part of that, and how's it all going?
Yes, I mean, this is part of it. It was always our intention to move to a paywall on the Limestone Coast, so I don't think there's any surprises there for people in the southeast. The ongoing operational funds from the state government have been very useful, and have helped us to, keep operating during this time, and also really tighten up the business and really pursue some of these non-agricultural leads as well for potential revenue sources. My understanding is that the state government will receive a report soon from an independent contractor to advise them on, on what's best to do with the MESANet, whether to continue or not. So, we'll see what happens. I personally think the MESANet is crucial to solve spray drift. It's crucial for modern agriculture across South Australia, and it provides fantastic value for money, not just as a potential end user, but as a potential service as well. Our shortfall is not huge in terms of our revenue. I think if we get some, if we all get together, we can find a solution to this problem.
Damien, I know you mentioned it at the start, but just remind us there again, when will this change take place for those subscribers?
Yeah. So it's June 4th. It's 2 weeks from now. So if you haven't tried the MESANet for a while, or you haven't tried it at all, jump on to get that free trial. And even if you're too busy, even after June 4th, you can still get a 2-week free trial just by signing up anyway. So, yeah, jump on and see what the fuss is about.
Damien, thanks for joining us on the Country Hour.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
Damien Grace there, General Manager of Conditions Over the Land, or COTL, which runs that MESANet system. So those changes are taking place early June. It is at 12 minutes past It's 14 minutes past 12. One of the biggest news pieces of news in politics this week has been the national split from the coalition. The partnership collapsed after the parties failed to agree on issues like nuclear energy and the Regional Australia Future Fund. But Nationals leader David Littleproud says if the two parties are to form a coalition again in the future, then Liberal leader Susan Ley will need to be supportive of the live sheep export trade.
There would be no coalition if there was the removal of the live sheep industry as a part of a coalition policy. There can be no coalition we'd be part of that. So I presume and I hope that the Liberal Party get to that realisation without us in the coalition, but that's a matter for them to work through. But our position is resolute. And if we're part of a future coalition government, that will be a condition. That is one that I set in stone when I became leader of the Nationals in 2022.
Well, Susan Ley does have history with this industry, having introduced a private members bill to end the trade. Did she make it clear that she's still against the trade?
Well, it goes without saying that wouldn't. If she wants to go against the trade, then there definitely won't be a coalition.
Did you discuss it, though?
No, we didn't, because my expectation is her view hasn't changed on that, and I've seen public comment to that effect, but that's a matter for her to clarify, not for me. But that is a line in the sand for the National Party. The reinstatement of the industry is something that we've committed to and we'll never walk away from.
But at this stage, the Liberal Party itself is saying that it does support the trade. Is that what...
That's a matter of, I'm not going to put words in their mouths. Those are questions you'd have to put to them.
We're now with the trade, the live sheep trade, is set to end May 2028, and many commentators believe that Labor is going to win the next federal election, taking us well beyond that end date. Is it time to concede defeat, for industry to concede defeat on this, considering the timeframe and the expectations for the next federal election?
Well, I wouldn't write off the next federal election. The mob can turn and can turn quickly, and it'll be predicated by what's been bled out of their wallets. So I wouldn't write anything off. Yes, it's a big margin, but I think anything can happen in Australian politics and it can turn quickly. In respect of phasing it out, I think if you look at over the ditch to New Zealand, they've reinstated their live export industry. What we want to do is get to the point where if we're back in government at some juncture, that we will give that commitment, that you can reinstate the industry.
Is that true, though, that the New Zealand government has reinstated the live trade? Isn't that just a number of dairy cattle going over? It's not to the extent that Australia has a live sheep trade.
No, but I think it shows that if you have that commitment and you, as a government, give that confidence to industry, then you create the market environment for that to take place.
That's the leader of the Nationals, David Littleproud, speaking there to Belinda Varischetti earlier. And just seeing on ABC News right now as we speak, the Nationals leader, Littleproud, is speaking to the media, saying that there's been a delay in the announcement of the Nationals and the Liberals' front bench because there is a possible reconciliation in the works. So watch this space. It might turn out to be one of the shortest divorces in political history, but no announcement. A bit of a delay on the front benches amid a possible reconciliation between the National Party and the Liberals to reform the coalition.
This is ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
You are with Selena Green on the Country Hour today, and it is 18 minutes past 12. Well, virtual fencing, how keen are you to use that? Because Victoria will become the second to last state in the country to legalise its use. Virtual fencing gives noise, vibration and electric shock cues to cattle to tell them where they can and can't walk. By the end of the year, South Australia could be the only jurisdiction there where the technology remains banned. Victoria's Ag Minister, Ros Spence, made the announcement yesterday.
I've asked Agriculture Victoria to prepare amendments to the current Prevention of Cruelty to Animals regulations so that it will permit the use of virtual fencing and herding in this state.
So virtual fencing will be allowed in Victoria?
Yes. Yes, it will. For cattle... and we'll change the regulations to make that the case.
How much work went into making this decision from your end?
This has been a really considered decision, Warwick. I, for my part, earlier this year, I visited Allan Bank Smart Farm to see the trial that's underway there, and I found it pretty impressive. So following then, I wanted to see the technology being used, not in a trial scenario, but in everyday farming. So I went over to Tasmania and met with three farmers who are using the technology over there with their cattle, saw two different types of virtual fencing being used, and I also met with a researcher there to discuss her findings, particularly in relation to animal welfare, and met with another farmer from New Zealand who's been using this technology for a long time. So they spoke to me about what they saw as the benefits. We've also heard from industry, manufacturers and researchers to learn all about the technology and what benefits it can have in Victoria. I'm convinced that Victorian farmers should have the option to use virtual fencing and herding technology if they choose to. Convinced that it can improve productivity, can improve pasture and grazing management, reduce the need for physical fences, reduce exposure to work health and safety issues. So going and having those conversations and getting that information has really made it very clear in my mind that there's benefits.
There's a couple of things to step through there. First is the animal welfare concern. So it sounds like you're comfortable weighing up the animal welfare concerns of technology that can deliver a shock to an animal being used properly in Victoria.
Yeah, I am convinced that the animal welfare concerns can be addressed, and they'll be addressed through the safeguards, the appropriate safeguards that will be put in place in the regulations, and that I'm comfortable with. There's always a need to consider animal welfare issues, and they can certainly be addressed.
The flip side of that is Victoria is now the second last state in Australia to allow this technology. Were you concerned Victorian farmers, particularly dairy farmers, where we're home of two-thirds of Australian dairy, could be left behind if a decision wasn't made soon?
Well, that's why we've worked pretty hard on this for the last couple of months, so that we could be assured that any concerns that might be raised could be addressed, and that's why we're progressing it.
What's the timeline from here? When will virtual fencing be allowed in Victoria?
I'm advised by Agriculture Victoria that we can have this work done by the end of the year.
That is Victoria's Ag Minister Ros Spence speaking to Warwick Long. In a recent statement, South Australia's Primary Industries Minister Claire Scriven says that the state government here says it's listened to the livestock industry and is moving forward to allow virtual fencing to support primary industries. So the state government here in South Australia is supportive of it, but they'll be drafting regulations that promote best practice for animal welfare and producers, and those will be subject to public and stakeholder consultation. Well, virtual fencing was given the green light in New South Wales last month, and we've just heard now it's heading to Victoria. Karoonda farmer Paul Roberts, he has been trialling virtual fencing as part of a South Australian Drought Hub initiative. He told Kerry Lush that while it's only early days, the trial's saving them hours and their cell grazing cattle operation.
We started in February this year, so we're only at the start of a three-year project, and found it working very well. So it takes a little while for the cows to get used to it, to the neck bends, but once they get used to it, it's been really effective.
Tell me a bit about how it works.
You set up a web application and a phone application, and you set up your virtual paddocks, just a line in the paddock, and you make it a whatever area or size or shape you want, and then you can put the cows, get a neck band, and then the neck band sends off a sound when they get close to the virtual fence, and they'll get three sounds. And then on the third time, they'll get a pulse. And with that, the cow learns or knows not to go any further. It takes a little bit of education. And, the cow will get three pulses. If they continue on approaching or going past the virtual fence, then the fence will turn off. So there is safety measures in place and practical measures for the animal so it doesn't keep getting pulsed. And the fence will turn itself back on once it comes back inside the virtual fence, and then it'll reset and start again.
So does the virtual fence use GPS coordinates? Is that how it works?
Yes, that's correct. So the system I'm using runs through the cellular network. It's a GPS in a small receiver inside the cow collar in the neck band and run by solar power.
So you need either good phone service or Wi-Fi to that area, I'm assuming?
Yep. With our system, because we're so close to the township of the Karoonda, where we run it, we can run it through the cellular network. But if you're in more remote areas, there is a base station that you can get, and the GPS signal can track to that base station and then give the signal and work in that way as well.
So what were the reasons for you trialling that? Did you need to redo some physical fencing? Are you using it for cell grazing? Like, why did you think it would work on your farming system?
We've been growing perennial pastures for a little while and been cell grazing that just with the poly wire. And we've been running the system pretty tight, high stocking rates, and then a long recovery. And this is just the next step in that system going forward, that we can use a virtual fence. You can turn your fences off. You can make up as many, as big as or a smaller paddock as you like on the ventral fence side, and then you can turn them on and off in 30 seconds and then shift your towels through your paddocks quickly and easily. So it's just the next step in a cell grazing system, or that's how we see it, just to reduce labour and time in putting up poly wires, and also you can run it tighter and harder, and we can shift your cows more effectively and keep them where we want to keep them and keep them off the areas as well that we don't want to put them on.
Cost-wise, how does it compare?
The collars themselves or the neck bands cost $350 each. There is a lease option available. I'm not sure what that is worth. And then there's an ongoing subscription fee. So the cost is quite hefty at the start. There's no question about that. I can't really put a cost associated to installing polywires. All it's probably done is freed up my time and or my family's time that build the fences. So we've got a little bit of extra time back. That cost is probably negligible. It's just absorbed through the business. So we don't employ anyone to physically do the poly wires, but this is just the next step.
Have you come across any downsides so far?
One is we've got a couple of cows that are very accepting and taking the shot. Yeah, they're getting trained and getting educated and coming back. And the second one is it works too well. You can shift the cows sitting over a cup of coffee at 7:30 in the morning. It takes out the paddock, which is, part of that I don't enjoy. And, it takes the kids out too. That's always fun, shifting cows with the kids, but now that job's disappearing. So that's a downside.
How practical or economical do you think it would be for most farmers in South Australia?
It depends on the system that they're running. It's not going to be suited for everyone, but if you're in a cell grazing system and you're running your paddocks in that system, it's going to be hugely advantageous. For someone who's doing just standard set stocking, then there's probably not going to be any advantages. No, unless you've got four fences and you don't want to spend any money on fences, and you say you take that money and buy the neck bands, then that would be effective.
Have you seen any negative effects on the cattle other than those few stubborn ones that don't mind a bit of a shock?
Probably not. We had pretty quiet cows before, and we got our cows in 2 weeks ago for marking, and the cows were even quieter than they were before, and it's amazing how much quieter they've got. You go far out, that's unbelievable. So there's, on the animal side, it's really, really positive.
Well, Robert's there. He's a grain and cattle producer at Karoonda, and he was speaking there to Kerry Lush. It's 27 minutes past 12. You're with Selena Green. Let's head to the Weather Bureau, and our forecaster today is Simon Timke. Hello, Simon.
Hi, Selena.
I am seeing blue skies and sunshine outside of my window. Is that a story for other parts of the state?
Oh, for most of the state today, yes. We are looking at the satellite pictures, a little bit of cloud over Eyre Peninsula, which is slowly breaking up, and also a little bit out over the Nullarbor Plain. But everywhere else is pretty much cloud-free, so plenty of sunshine across the state today. It was pretty cold again over parts of the east. We did see minimum temperatures pretty low down over the Riverland and southeast districts in particular. Narra Court and Coonawarra down to -3. Keith and Padthaway not far behind them. Renmark and Loxton -2. So plenty of frost around the eastern districts to start off with this morning. But looking around the state now, as I said, plenty of sunshine now. The wind's not too strong either under a high pressure ridge. So generally lightish sort of winds, if anything, southeasterly in direction, tending around a bit more northeasterly out in the far west there. So pretty similar day on the way for Friday too. We've got a frost warning out already for Friday morning, and that is for the eastern districts again, Riverland, Murraylands, upper southeast, lower southeast, also for the mid-north district for tomorrow morning too. So some cold conditions expected again tomorrow morning, and then a day pretty similar to this one, with that high pressure ridge continuing to keep us under pretty stable conditions. However, over the weekend, there is a bit of a change in the weather. Over the weekend and again on Monday, we've got a series of fairly vigorous cold fronts moving across. So for Saturday, we'll see conditions become a bit windier. We haven't had many windy days lately, but certainly over the weekend and Monday, we will see a bit of a change in that regard. Pretty fresh and gusty northwesterly winds on Saturday. And we'll see a little bit of shower and thunderstorm activity develop too about western and southern coastal districts as that first front moves across. So with those northerly winds a bit, we'll see the temperatures up a bit, so not quite so cold overnight and warmer during the day. And similarly on Sunday, I think the next front will approach. We'll see the showers contract back to the coastal fringe. And Sunday will probably be a bit windier than Saturday, I think. So fresh to strong and gusty northwesterly winds again, probably reaching strong to gale force near southern coast. So we'll have plenty of marine wind warnings out over the weekend. And with those sort of winds, especially Sunday, chance of seeing some blowing dust around the place. I think it's obviously been very dry for a long time now, so with windier conditions, I expect there will be a bit of dust around. On Monday, the most significant change moves across, and we'll see a west to southwesterly wind change. The wind's still pretty strong and gusty, and the showers with that west to southwesterly change will push a bit further inland. So I think we'll see showers extend over the agricultural area and near western coasts, maybe even the odd one reaching the far south of the pastoral districts, but I think that'll be a bit of a stretch. Again, there might be some isolated thunderstorms about the southern agricultural area. Raised dust is a possibility again. We'll be starting to see some more significant waves over the waters too. So the beaches will be seeing the tides up a bit higher and bigger waves too. So a pretty significant weather day on the way for Monday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the next high pressure ridge pushes in though. And so conditions do stabilise, the winds ease, the showers contract back to the southern agricultural area. We do see a few showers develop up in the far northwest, sort of northwest of about Cooper Pedy as well, through the middle part of next week. For our rainfall totals for that four-day period out to the end of Monday, I think for the northern agricultural area and west coast district, mostly less than 2 millimetres, but I think we will see some local falls reach up to around 5 millimetres or so about western and southern Eyre Peninsula and also near the northeast coast of Spencer Gulf there. Further south, a bit more, 5 to 15 millimetres generally about the southern agricultural area. And I think we'll see some local higher falls of 15 to 35 millimetres near southern coasts and ranges. And with some thunderstorms about, there might even be the odd spot that picks up a little bit more than that, Selena. So hopefully, fingers crossed, might see a little bit of useful rainfall around on Monday in particular.
Oh boy, we certainly hope so. And we'll keep fingers toesed. Whatever, eyes, whatever
everything
else you
crossed.
Can cross. Anything
everything
you can cross
crossed.
It, cross it.
Absolutely. Eyes as well. We can cross our eyes even, can't we?
Exactly. Yeah, fantastic. Simon, thank you for that. Have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, Selena.
Simon Timke there from the Weather Bureau. Looking quickly at the western inland parts of New South Wales for Friday, partly cloudy in the upper western district, chance of fog in the northeast in the early morning and some patches of morning frost expected near the South Australian border. For the lower western district, you can expect a cloudy day with a slight chance of a shower. And for both of those districts, we're looking at overnight temperatures somewhere between 4 and 9 degrees and during the day climbing between 17 and 21 degrees. The time, it is 27 minutes to 1.
You're listening to Selena Green on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Thanks for your company today. Now, that's the big question. Is there any hay left to buy here in South Australia? We'll get an update on the national feed situation in just a moment and check in with one Northern Territory producer who's getting queries from down in South Australia. A bit of an, well, not an unheard of situation, but certainly an unusual one.
In those massive drought years, when all those guys with the buy bale and the people donating hay and carting it across to, you know, across the, well, across Australia, really. But yeah, we've sent hay right down the, you know, further southeast down to Victoria and that sort of stuff, and when it's been needed. But hopefully things don't get that bad.
And we're certainly all hoping that. We'll come back to that story after we get some news headlines from Matt Coleman. Good afternoon, Matt.
Hello, Selena. In the news this afternoon, the Australian Electoral Commission says it may need another fortnight to work out the winner in the South Australian seat of Grey. The full distribution of preferences began this week. Located in the state's northwest, Grey is SA's largest federal seat, taking up more than 92% of its geography. The Liberal and National parties have agreed to delay announcing their frontbenchers in a step towards reconciliation just days after breaking up. Both party leaders have been locked in negotiations today after senior members from both sides pushed for a rethink of the split. Susan Lee and David Littleproud had started allocating portfolios to colleagues but have now put the planned announcement on ice. And New South Wales Premier Chris Minns is warning there could be more bad news after a difficult 48 hours as heavy rainfall continues to affect the state's mid-north coast. Widespread rainfall of 100 millimetres is expected to fall today, but isolated areas could see falls of up to 200 and 300 millimetres. Meanwhile, the body of a 63-year-old man was found at a flooded property at Moto yesterday afternoon near the town of Taree. More news at 1 o'clock.
Thank you, Matt. Matt Coleman with those headlines. Yes, of droughts and flooding rains, certainly living up to that reputation at the moment. Well, hay seems pretty much at the forefront of most farmers' minds at the moment. How to get it, how much it's costing, how to get it here, and whether or not to hold on to whatever you have left. As we've heard, hay supply is incredibly tight here in South Australia. Desperate folks are paying high prices for hay from further north than we'd normally see coming into the state. Well, Feed Central Managing Director Tim Ford recently visited some farms in South Australian clients and I understand was pretty struck by what he saw. He joins me now. Tim, thank you very much for your time.
Good afternoon, Selena.
So you had a chance to fly into South Australia and meet with some of your clients. Just describe what you saw and how you saw it.
Yeah, I've visited South Australia many times over the last 25 years. We've got a number of really close clients, and over a period of time, clients become friends when you're in the fodder industry. And that's certainly the case in South Australia. So we had a really solid trip around South Australia, down to the southeast and up to the mid north. And yeah, from length to the breadth of the state, it's clearly in a really desperate time. And a lot of our clients and friends are doing it really tough in that part of the state. And I can give a picture of hay supply nationally, and how that affects South Australia, because it's sort of a fairly important subject at the moment.
Absolutely. And some of these farms, are they usually really reliable for supplying hay into the market in a good year?
Yeah, we take great pleasure in being able to buy hay out of South Australia almost every year. A number of long-term relationships with suppliers through South Australia, and that hay generally goes into Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland and sometimes into the Northern Territory. But at the moment, unfortunately, there's a lot of product coming back into South Australia from other states.
From someone who's been doing this a long time, Tim, how unusual is that reversal of the market we're seeing now? Huge demand moving into South Australia rather than flowing out.
Yeah, I'd say it's, extremely unusual. I mean, it has happened once or twice before in relatively small quantities, and probably for a relatively short period of time. The need at the moment seems to be that it's needed in much bigger quantities and, potentially for an extended period of time. And that's what's different in this situation, I think, this year.
We've been hearing that there's virtually no hay left for sale here in South Australia. We're as close to out of supply as we've seen it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty accurate description, Selena. My team's involvement in South Australia, and I've just got off the phone from doing a ring around some clients and friends in South Australia just before coming on air. And yeah, look, that's a very accurate description. The supply of hay in South Australia is all but exhausted. My company and others have been bringing hay into South Australia for a number of weeks now. That doesn't look like stopping anytime soon.
Yeah, and I imagine there's a lot of folks who might have had some that they were hoping to send into the market, maybe make some money back on that, but they'd now be holding on to that for their own livestock.
Yeah, we've got growers, particularly, I mean, the mid-north growers, a lot of those guys are cropping only these days, but the southeast growers, you know, can often be a combination of hay, grain and livestock, and certainly the growers in the southeast have certainly closing their sheds door and hanging on to anything that they do have for their own stock as the year just keeps getting worse. But you know, the growers in the mid-north, they're, you know, pretty well exhausted and maybe holding some tight to their chest just for their, you know, for their immediate local, you know, friends and local customers. But there's certainly no quantity of stock anywhere in South Australia.
So understandably, what we're hearing, a fair bit of anxiety around about supply, whether that's here in South Australia. And of course, we're seeing now the flooding situation in New South Wales and the floods in Queensland. So just how much is out there?
Yeah, I think the key word there is, you know, there is some anxiety at the moment, which we don't necessarily see across the South Australian fodder industry. It's normally very stable, and there's clients that are, you know, are expressing that anxiety at the moment. As far as a national picture goes, the Queensland floods there over Easter in that period, that's a vast livestock system in there, and the use of hay is not common. And there was quite a bit of hay dropped out of helicopters. That amounted to about 2,000 tonnes from what I understand. And then, you know, there would have been some other hay move into that area off trucks. The flooding around on the New South Wales coast now around Taree and so forth will have a much bigger impact on the hay market. If we go back to the Lismore flood, and it's a little bit hard to compare this flood with the Lismore flood at the moment on New South Wales, except it's a similar livestock production system in both areas. We don't know exactly, you know, how big the flood is now compared to Lismore, but that Lismore flood did use a lot of hay as livestock recovered. It's a dairy region, it's an intensive livestock region, extensive flooding. So we can expect demand out of that Lismore region, which could be significant. And then you've got the extreme drought through the Riverina, Victoria, and, you know, extreme in South Australia. So you've got you've got a fairly unique situation sort of unfolding with the fodder supply.
Speaking to Tim Ford today, who's the Managing Director of Feed Central and Local Ag. So with such competing interests around the nation at the moment, obviously we've seen prices go pretty high. Can they go higher, or are they likely to go higher still?
Look, there's a few things happening in the market. There's product available out of Queensland. There's product available there might be a little bit of product out in the Northern Territory, and there may be some product that can come across in South Australia, out of Western Australia, sorry. So you're talking very significant freight rates. To bring product in out of Victoria and New South Wales over the last few weeks, you know, for cereal hay that's been landing into South Australia for between $500 and $600 a tonne, generally, depending on where it's going. And, you know, product out of other states may be just a little bit dearer than that as the freight becomes further away. Lucerne's been sort of trading at that $600 to $650 mark delivered into South Australia, which a lot of that is freight. And so we'd hope to be able to, you know, that we won't be able to bring Lucerne in from Western Australia or from interstate much longer, but certainly there might be some cereal hay available from other states that we can bring in. So we'd be hoping those prices can land in that, you know, that $550 to $650 mark as a general indication going forward over the next couple of months, which are extremely high prices. The millennial drought the 2017-18-19 drought, there were people on the New England paying up to $800 a tonne for hay. I'm hoping that it doesn't get to those levels. In the scheme of things, $550 to $650 a tonne is very, very expensive for hay. However, it is essential to be keeping those cattle, those livestock healthy during what could be a really harsh winter over the next couple of months.
Absolutely. Tim, if we do get a late break, obviously it's going to rain at some point here again in South Australia. June, maybe, later June, looking a likely or possible rain possibility there. I mean, how long is it going to take to build back up supply out of South Australia once that happens?
Oh, look, it could... We wouldn't... be expecting a massive supply increase in South Australia now. We'd hope to be able to bring supplies back to a reasonable level by the end of the year if there's a break in early June. The growers that we're talking to are saying that every day that the crop doesn't, a lot of the crop's germinated. A lot of the crop is planted dry or sown dry. When the rain comes and it germinates, the growers are saying that every day there's a delay in germination, the yields are falling backwards at the end of the season. So we're sort of passing that ideal germination date. So we'd expect to see some increase in supply. But we really, South Australia has often got a couple of years of supply in front of it, and so that's going to take a number of years to get back to those levels.
Well, finally, before we let you go, as you say, there is a bit of anxiety out there. What would you be your main message or advice to anyone out there seeking hay at the moment?
Look, the main thing is to be, to be prepared, to recognise there's a lot of freight cost, to be prepared and to do research. There are places where, there are a number of websites available where people can do research. There are people that you can talk to. Reach out to local support networks as well, just to be able to run ideas. Often a farm advisor or a animal nutritionist is key as part of the decision-making process. You're not alone. There's people within your network that can assist you in your decision-making process, even if it's just having a yarn, having a chat about what you're thinking of doing. You can just have that conversation with a farm advisor, with a friend, someone that's selling hay. Just don't feel as though there's alone. There's options, and there's also, the industry is working towards ensuring that there's supply, even if that's from Western Australia, if that's from Queensland, we're working that there's a supply, and I think we've got some commercial, some commercial solutions. So I think that we should, potentially remove that barrier that we're completely out of product nationally. And and then just keep talking to people and keep the decision making process going. Keep an open communication with farm advisors, partners, and so forth. And you're not alone out there. There's a number of people that can assist.
Yeah, keep reaching out. You're not alone. That's a really good message, yeah. No matter whether you're looking for hay or with anything, any decisions that people are making at the moment, for sure.
Yes,
Tim, yep. Thank you very much for joining us on the country. I really do appreciate you setting aside some time for us.
Thank you, Salita.
Tim Ford there. He is the Managing Director of Feed Central and Local Ag. A bit of a wrap of what's happening with the hay situation here in South Australia, but nationally also at the moment. We're going to stick with hay for a little while longer because as we are hearing that desperate southern livestock producers are looking to find hay from thousands of kilometres away, and that includes the Northern Territory. And a lot of top-end hay producers started baling up their crop a few weeks ago. According to Ben Coutts from Nutrien Ag in Katherine, the phone calls from down south have been rolling in.
Yeah, there is a bit of call internally in our system, and a few of the farmers have said that they might be orders for hay to go south. The tricky bit's always the freight going back, but I guess at the end of the day, we're probably the closest avenue for that cheaper sort of grass hay and forage hay that to get back into South Australia. But yeah, I definitely have heard of shortages down that way, so it'll be interesting. And given that we probably not going to have the absolute banger season that we were expecting in the Territory, it may make it a little bit hard on demand, for our guys. I mean, the best bit of advice I can have is lock your hay in early, because as we know, if we sort of sit around and wait until August, September, October, then if that demand does pull a bit of hay out of the Territory, you might find it hard to get late in the year.
And how are the prices compared to, say, this time last year?
Well, it's one of them things. Hay is a hard one, and given that they've just started baling, and the cost of input, the basics comes down to the cost of input is very similar depending on what you're putting in. So the cost of diesel, the cost of fertiliser, the cost of manpower, all of those sorts of things. So if you work on your average on what you're going to get off, there's an average price that people can work off, but if you've got paddocks there that are only yielding half that, well, you've still got the same input cost and you're only getting half the amount of product out of it. So I guess that's going to have a bearing. As I say, we're starting to truck hay some big lots of hay on that at the moment. So that'll, yeah, once the crop yields are sort of locked in and that, I, but it's stayed reasonably stable. It's up a little bit, but we don't see massive spikes and troughs in the territory. It's, yeah, it's generally the prices stay pretty reasonable. So,
and have you heard of any cattle stations, I guess, keeping storing up their hay in case it kind of does go crazy?
Yeah, well, a lot of the people that are sort of cross farm, you know, multi sort of farming operations where they're doing cattle and hay would be keeping as much as they can for themselves, I would assume. And as I say, there are a few people, you know, ordering early and stacking a bit up just because we really don't know now. And obviously in the last, given that we've just started baling in the last 2 or 3 weeks, we have sort of heard of that demand down south. So I think it'll be interesting in the next sort of couple of weeks or months just to see how that does affect taking hay south. And but as I say, I think, you know, we've got forecast obviously what we need for our regular clients and what we use through the shop.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can get through to the end of the year.
And you mentioned freighting. Like, what's the logistics of, say, of that, getting that hay down?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think if there's enough trucks going back that have got space, then it won't affect it too much. But, if you have to pay special freight just to cart hay down to SA, it becomes expensive. The freight can be very similar to what the actual hay costs. So if the hay costs $400 a tonne, you know, it could be $300 or $400 a tonne to freight it back as well. So it gets a bit hard when half of your cost is actually just the cost of transport. So, but at the end of the day, if that's the way, if they need it, then I guess they'll have to buy it.
Where's the furthest you've ever freighted hay to in the past?
We had in those massive drought years, there were when all those guys with the buyer bale and the people donating hay and carting it across to, you know, across the, well, across Australia really. But yeah, we've sent hay right down the, you know, further southeast down to Victoria and that sort of stuff. And when it's been needed. But hopefully things don't get that bad this year. We just sort of hope that the weather turns for them fellas down south, and they produce a lot of hay in a short amount of time too when they get good weather in SA. So hopefully that'll he's up for them, because I think the supply, we've got enough supply, and with people growing their own hay up here and then commercial people selling into clients and into ourselves and that, we should have enough hay to service our market. So hopefully if those guys come back on board south, then everyone's happy.
That's what we want. That's Ben Coutts there. He's from Nutrient Ag in Katherine in the Northern Territory, and he was speaking there to Christine Schindler.
You meet the most interesting people on Sunday morning.
Driving through this hot land, full of dust and smoke, this little Tommy fella feels like a true blue Aussie bloke.
Join the rest of Australia right here on Sunday morning.
Australia All Over, Sunday mornings on ABC Radio.
This is ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
8:01 at the moment. Well, you'll hear a question a lot from those not in farming or in agriculture is, well, how can we help struggling farmers at the moment? Well, one way certainly is to buy local and buy Australian. This week is actually Australian Made Week, and people right across the country being encouraged to go for gold and buy products that are grown, made and sold locally. So with farmers right across South Australia facing tough economic and environmental conditions, how much of an impact does a campaign like this have? Samuel O'Brien asked Australian Made Chief Executive Ben Lazzaro how a campaign like this is hopefully shifting consumer behaviour.
The intention of the week is to draw into sharp focus the positive aspects, the knock-on effects when we buy Aussie, and how it helps all Australians, with a view for those purchasing decisions to be carried out throughout the year. We want to change buying habits to make sure we're always looking for Aussie-made products first.
The Australian-made brand is a pretty strong one. It's pretty well recognisable across the country. How much cut-through have you had in changing consumer behaviour over the years?
Well, the research is very positive. Overwhelmingly, Australians want to buy Australian-made products. They want to be able to identify them easily, and of course, that's where the Green and Gold Kangaroo comes in. But they're also, they tell us that they understand more the positive effects when we buy Australian, and I think that coming out of the COVID pandemic, where that was very much self-sufficient, was very much at the forefront. I think it became very apparent for people that when we buy Australian, we support local businesses, we pump money into the economy, we get products made to high standards, and it's basically a win-win scenario. So research is telling us that they're looking for it, they're buying it more, and they're actually willing to pay a little bit more on the odd occasion where buying Australian can be more expensive. So about 70% of Aussie consumers are willing to buy pay more.
Look, in regional communities where we are providing a lot of food and a lot of resources for our city counterparts, how important is buying Australian and buying stuff that is made in our local area to help support, you know, those on the land?
The origins of buying Aussie or making things and growing things often start in the regions. A lot of the good ideas and obviously a lot of where we grow our produce starts in the region. So very, very important. And it's also probably a little easier to see the positive impacts when you buy local in a regional community, perhaps more so than in the more urban areas. So very, very important, Australia's regional communities, for growing our fresh produce that we take for granted here. As we know, a lot of it gets exported and sold at a premium overseas. So it's always good to take stock and acknowledge and remember that we're pretty lucky that we've got this clean, green environment and these wonderful working conditions here in Australia and have access to these wonderful Aussie products.
We've got drought conditions right across South Australia with low rainfall over the last 12 months really impacting farmers. How much more important is it to support farmers when it isn't, you know, isn't a good time, when the farmers are struggling to make ends meet?
Well, I think at these times, you know, 365 days a year, we should be looking for Aussie products and produce. But as you pointed out, when they are doing it tough, then I think it makes sense for us all to put a little bit more in our shopping basket when we're at the supermarket, particularly when it comes to our Aussie-grown produce. And in fact, if every Australian household spent an extra $10 a week on Aussie products, we create around 10,000 jobs and pump another $5.5 billion into the economy. So real practical and effective way that we can all make a difference.
When we talk about the impacts of tough conditions, we often talk about the farmers, but it's also about the communities in those regions. And a lot of those is also small businesses. Is it important also to make sure we're changing our habits to support the local businesses that might be able to further help the local economy?
Yeah, spot on. There's a knock-on effect, of course. You know, manufacturers don't just manufacture or grow by themselves. They've got service providers all the way through the supply chain. So you're spot on. We should be looking to support our local businesses, particularly in those local, more small communities.
How much of a benefit does that bring to those local businesses, and how much of that then gets reinvested into the local community?
Well, it just stands to reason. If we're putting money into local businesses, they then are supporting businesses in turn, and the knock-on effects throughout the supply chain can be quite dramatic. That's that before about spending an extra $10. You can see that a simple action from the majority of Australians can actually deliver a huge financial input into the economy. So we've all got the opportunity to do that. And if we search for those Aussie products, we make our business decisions based on who we use, Australia first, then I think we'll find ourselves in good territory.
That is the Chief Executive of Australian Made, Ben Lazzaro, and he was speaking there to Samuel O'Brien. We're 3 minutes away from the news, just time to get the Mount Compass market wrap-up, and for today we've got that from Brooke Neindorf. Hi, Brooke.
Hi, Selena. Numbers reduced this week as agents offered 640 live weight cattle, nearly 400 down on the previous week. Agents suggesting some welcome rainfall over the supply area resulted in a pause in the current sell-off. Cows and heifers continue to make up the bulk of the numbers, with many of these in only C2 and D2 muscle and fat score. The usual trade and processor buyers were in attendance and operating along with feeders, while restockers were more active this week on lighter, younger cattle. The market returned a mostly firm trend for type and condition, with heavy cows posting a 5 to 20 cents a kilo lift in price. Bealer steers sold from 250 cents to 369 cents, as heifers ranged from 200 to 337 cents a kilo. Yearling steers sold from 280 to 360 cents, as heifers ranged from 200 to 357 cents a kilo. Grain steers sold from 200 to 337 cents, as heifers ranged from 241 to 371 cents a kilo. Light beef cows ranged from 149 to 200 cents, as medium beef cows sold from 91 to 287 cents a kilo, with medium dairy cows fetching 143 to 220 cents a kilo. Heavy beef cows sold from 140 to 331 cents, with dairy types fetching 150 to 275 cents a kilo. Bulls sold from 237 cents to 315 cents a kilo. This has been Brooke Nindorf filling in for John Traeger for MLA's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thank you, Brooke, for those numbers. Well, that's it for the Country Hour for today. Thanks so much for your company. It's coming up to the 1 o'clock news, but I'll be back with you tomorrow at noon for more Country Hour. Don't forget, you can listen back to anything you've missed if you go find us on the ABC Listen app. You can find us on there. You can find us on our website if you just look for South Australian Country Hour. And while you're on the web, make sure you go to abc.net.au/rural and you'll get all of the latest and greatest in rural stories as well. Plenty of reading material on there. It's almost 1 o'clock. I'll catch you tomorrow. Have a good one.
If it's happening locally.
Currently in a situation, if there's something occurring by the side of the road, people should be aware of what's happening up ahead and be prepared to adjust their speed accordingly.
You'll hear it here on ABC Radio.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.